right, it is Predictably Drunk, the podcast. I am Sam Marcoux. This is smart people talking about stupid things. And I am pretty sure that this episode is going to be exactly that, more so than any other. I do have a guest. I have a guest that I'm going to be bringing in here in a couple minutes. But before I start that, there is something I need to get off my chest. As a comedian, as somebody who frequents stages and tells jokes and has a pretty wide network of comedian friends, as well as comedian acquaintances, I think I am qualified, more than qualified, actually, to mention this. And if this had happened, if this incident that I'm going to be talking about had happened today, or if I had been recording about a week ago when this actually happened, I think this would be much more of an anger and hatred-filled rant. But given the fact that it's been a week, and given the fact that it's probably not the worst offense that somebody can do, it's probably going to be a little more low-key than that. But I do feel the need to bring this up. I'm going to leave some names out of this. But I will say this, for the comedians that are listening to this, that listen to this show weekly, and some of you do, I got to tell you, not everything on this planet is a stage. Not everything is a bit. Not everything needs to be a joke. And, you know, you're probably saying, oh, lighten up, Sam, what the fuck? But I'm going to tell you right now, if people die, you can make jokes, in my opinion. I don't care. If you're a comedian, that's how people handle it. You can make jokes with just about everything. My only time that I really don't want you to make a joke is when somebody is trying to help you, number one, and B, when you're around other comedians and you're not on stage. Turn that fucking shit off. Just turn it off, please. If I'm talking to you and we're having a conversation and I feel that you're starting to try to put a bit on me and you don't say, hey, by the way, I'm going to try this bit out. What do you think? If you're just having a conversation and you slip into it and I feel like that's what's going, I'm going to fucking leave. I'm going to leave. I'm not going to talk to you and I don't want to be your friend anymore. And I'm fucking dead serious about this. And these two things are tied in because I had a friend of mine. I'm a part of a network called the Bay Area Comedy Network, or BACON for short. And what it is, it's a bunch of Bay Area comedians who have a message board, and we try to help each other out with bookings. We try to help each other out with skits and anything that we got going on, any projects, any shows, and we need somebody to fill a space. You usually go on this message board and say, hey, I've got this, you know, I got to do this. And somebody will say, hey, I'd like to be on that show, and you can book them. It's an awesome network. It works very well 99.9% of the time. Matt Gubser runs a solid, solid network there. However, recently, a friend of mine, actually somebody who's been on this show, Frankie Marcos, posted in there that he was looking for some, quote-unquote, experienced actors for a skit that he's putting together. As you guys know, Frankie Marcos is a very young comedian. Very funny, very smart, very ambitious, and he does not only stand-up comedy, but he does a lot of sketch comedy as well. And he's got himself a nice camera crew, he's got himself a great idea, and he was looking for people to help him in terms of actors, helping him out with his skit, with his show. And he put it out there, he was dead honest. He says, look, I'm not going to pay you, I'm looking for people that have experience, preferably, and if you can help out, great, here's the date that we're doing it. And I will feed you. Very, very honest, very open, very good opportunity for anybody who wants to network, get into sketch comedy, whatever the case may be. And for what it's worth, somebody like Frankie Marcos, who's on the rise, if for no other reason, if you're just an opportunist, you should probably jump on that type of situation. However, the problem is that people, mainly comedians, can't seem to ever let a situation go to be A, negative, or B, be on stage. Now, this is a closed network. Only people who are invited into it can be a part of this network, and it's really for us to talk business. And we're talking serious business, not, hey, you know, this is my show, I'm promoting it, come on out. No, it's, hey, can you be on this show? Okay, so there is a method to the madness of this network. Well, what happens? A bunch of morons start shitting all over this post going, oh, you can't ask for experienced actors and not pay them. That's fucked up. That's pretty crappy. No, it's not, you fucksticks. It is not crappy. Okay. I guarantee you, you've been on stage for less than getting fed. All right. All of us have. We've all gone on stage for nothing. Okay. We go on stage if somebody's going to give us a half price on a beer, and we get paid in fucking chicken wings more often than we get paid in money. So shut the fuck up about somebody giving you an opportunity and then you shitting all over it, especially in a public / private forum like that. If you don't like it, you think it's fucked up, then don't fucking say anything. Okay. Or message Frankie private and say, hey, I don't think this will fly. But you know what? If going out there and just throwing your dick out there for the sake of throwing your dick out there. And that's exactly what these people were doing, is they're going out there and they're just saying, look at me, trying to jump on Frankie's post. Then in my opinion, you're a piece of shit. And I really don't think you understand comedy. I don't think you understand life in general. And we would be better off if you weren't there. And that's my rant. And that was the toned down rant. I didn't name names. I kept the swearing to a fucking minimum. And I'm now over it. And I, you know what? I think it makes sense to have a topic like this started off because I believe my guest, who is going to be joining me here in half a second, has probably run into a lot of very douchey people in his line of work. Because this man, Matt Somerville, friend of mine, Hollywood movie editor extraordinaire, Hollywood enthusiast, Hollywood insider for me at least, has worked with many names in Hollywood, both in front of and behind the scenes. And I'm sure he's run into people who have just acted like complete morons and he's wanted to go off on them, but for whatever reason, he probably has not. But Matt Somerville joins us now. Matt, say hello to my audience.
Hi, audience.
Hello, audience. That is Matt Somerville. Now, Matt Somerville is the first non-in-house guest of this show, Predictably Drunk. He is actually, you are in L.A. now, right? Burbank, to be specific.
That's correct, yes. And I wish that I had really listened to the rest of your story, because I heard bacon, and I'm like, wait, that acronym, that's not right. That doesn't spell bacon. And then I just started thinking about bacon a lot, and I, yeah, sorry. Well, you were talking about douchebags who overextend their welcome and think that they're self-entitled beyond reason. Is that correct?
More or less. I mean, I think the problem that I have with comedy, and don't get me wrong, I love everything there is to love about comedy. I love being on stage. I love the process of writing jokes. I love talking about comedy. For Christ's sake, I've got a podcast that's pretty much dedicated to it.
Yeah.
But I can't. I mean, there's certain things that I hate. There's certain things that audience members do that I hate. Mainly when somebody finds out that I do stand-up comedy, the first thing out of their mouth is, well, tell me a joke. And my usual response is, well, give me $50, you know, because it's like, no, I'm not on fucking stage right now. I'm having a conversation. You don't need to do that. It's stupid. And with comics, what I find that I hate more than anything is that you could be having a conversation with them in the green room, and some of them will slip right into on-stage mode, and they start telling... They're doing a bit. They're doing a set. And you're like, for who? Who are you doing this bit and set for? We're all, I mean, stop it. Stop doing that shit. And it extends to social media. It extends to, you know, look, if you want to use Facebook and Twitter to further your brand and tell jokes, fine. I do it all the time. I think that's a good thing. But there's certain areas and behind closed doors when you're talking with other comedians, trying to book shows, trying to get things going, it's really not the time to go out there and just start critiquing other people in a negative way or doing your bits. I just think it's fucking stupid.
Yeah, I think that's ignorance. That's pure ignorance, because I think for anyone who's not around this stuff a lot, they just don't understand the difference between being on and not having to be on, so to speak.
It's you know, as a comic, you love the instant feedback. You know, we are in this for a look at me moment. You know, a lot of us, if not all of us, have on some level struggled with, I'm guessing, some sort of self-esteem issue for whatever reason. But my God, how fucked up are you that you need to have another comedian who's just as fucked up as you give you approval on a Facebook message post behind closed doors that no one else can see but other comedians who are invited to the group? It doesn't make sense to me. I think that, I mean, that is a deep level of fucked upness, which is, I don't even think a word, but it is now.
It's not a word, but it's, you made it a word. Yeah. I think that it's, you know, expanding on the ignorance. I think it's a situation where a lot of, I don't want to say normal people, but people who aren't performers or who aren't part of entertainment, in the industry of entertainment in any way, they're not around that a lot. And so when they know that they're meeting a comedian, or they know that they're meeting an actor, or someone sort of outside of their normal wheelhouse, they want that in person. They want performance in person. They want an example of you being a comedian in person. And I think people who are not professionals tend to do that in the opposite direction too. They tend to exhibit that kind of behavior when it's not appropriate.
But I mean, let me ask you, okay, if I'm walking down the street and I run into Tom Brady, quarterback for the New England Patriots, am I telling him right there, hey, can you go throw me a 25-yard out route? No, you're not fucking doing that. It's so stupid. I don't understand why. I mean, you work with Hollywood actors and actresses all the time, right? I mean, you've interviewed people like Harrison Ford. You've worked on the comedy side. You've worked with Dane Cook. You're an editor for his last Showtime special, Troublemaker. You also filmed it, right?
Yeah.
So you've worked very closely with folks like Dane Cook. You've worked. Who are some of the other actors that you've worked with? Tom Hanks.
Oh boy, Tom Hanks, Halle Berry. Who recently? Paul Rudd, Amy Poehler, Bradley Cooper. So
pretty much a who's who of who's in Hollywood right now. I mean, I think you just named about 15 Academy Awards. And do you, at any point when you're talking to Tom Hanks, ask him to recite lines from Bosom Buddies when you're interviewing him for a DVD? I mean, I
actually immediately constructed an enormous piano, and I said, come on, man, just once. Just fucking once.
Just step on it.
And we chopsticked the night away. And I'm in the weirdest, oddly enough, I'm in the perfect position to sort of back your argument where I'm having to talk to a lot of these people on camera, and so it's sort of I'm around them when they really don't want to be again on, so to speak. And I don't know if that makes sense to anyone else other than you and me. Should we explain what that means?
Well, look, here's what I would say. Yes, I mean, I think, you know, if you're on stage, I'm on stage and I'm telling a bunch of jokes, and then I get off stage and you want to come up and say, hey, that was a great set, I'm always going to be appreciative of that. Or, hey, that sucked. That's fine too. I mean, we can critique what I just did on stage. I'm fine with that. And I think actors and actresses as a whole would probably be okay with you saying, hey, I'm a big fan. Thank you very much for all your work. Can you sign this? Yes or no. Take a picture. Yes or no. That might be the borderline. But when you're interviewing somebody like Harrison Ford, and then the camera stops and he's just sitting there, he's got a million other things, I imagine, that he's got either on his plate that he's got to deal with, or he finally has a moment to himself to finally just sit there for 5 minutes before he gets whisked away to do something else. The last thing he wants is somebody like yourself or somebody else coming up to him and saying, hey, you know, by the way, I think it's bullshit that they changed that scene in Star Wars to where you didn't shoot first. Like, he doesn't want to fucking talk about that, I would imagine.
Yeah, he'd immediately murder you. Like, and Harrison Ford is a bad example because, indeed, there is nothing going on in Harrison Ford's mind if he can help it. Like, that moment of silence is indeed that. He just wants to fucking sit there and be. And but, yeah, for a lot of people, it's here's what I think it is. And I have this conversation a lot. And what I think it is that when you see somebody in a movie or on a talk show, when you see a famous person, it's going to be on a screen, or it's going to be during a live performance, and that's the version of that actor or performer that you see. And soon enough, you begin to develop this version of that person that you think you know. And it's only because all that you've been given is this version of them. And so that just, it becomes expected of that person to always be that version of them, no matter what. I saw this great clip online where it was this group of people outside of a tour bus, and they were waiting for somebody famous to come along. And lo and behold, Busta Rhymes, I don't know if famous is the right word, but he walks out and people do recognize him. And And they start shouting at him, like, hey, sign this, you know, talk to me, take a picture, blah, blah, blah. And he's completely ignoring them. And it's his right to. And this woman behind the camera, she utters under her breath, she says, oh, how rude is that, or some outrageous shit. And Busta hears this, turns around, stops dead in his tracks, turns around, looks at her, and says, what did you just say? Why would you say that? Like, that's fucking so... That is rude, what you said to me. And it turns out that Busta was really in need of taking an enormous shit. And right. That's why he was hurrying into his tour bus to try to not talk to anybody. He just needed to unload. And he explained to this woman over the course of like 2 or 3 minutes, like, I am a human being. You gotta let me be a human being. I can't always be the Busta that you want me to be.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if I'd recognize Busta today. He was in one of the Fast and Furious movies, I think. He also may have dabbled in the rap game. I'm not sure.
I think that's just very racist that you said that, because he's in none of those films.
He's in some – oh, he's in Training Day. Yeah, my fault. My bad. That's sorry,
right,
Busta.
That's right.
Busta's a big fan of the show, so yeah. I know he's listening right now.
He's calling right now, and he's upset.
He's actually calling and then like just swearing a million miles a minute, going up and down on the octave notes. I can't quite understand him. But apparently, yeah, he's got me all in check, so we'll move on to the next thing. The next thing, actually, I have Matt on here for a number of reasons. Number one, he's somebody who you just heard. He's dealing with a lot of very prominent people within the movie and entertainment industry. You've been wanting to do movies forever. I remember Matt and I have known each other since he was a freshman in high school and I was a senior.
Yes.
And you used to have a public cable access television show called Holy Moly back when you were in high school, which was kind of a cross between Jackass and Tom Green. It's probably the best way to put it, is the Tom Green Show / Jackass, marriage, if you will. And it was terrible. It was low budget, but it was also funny. And I could tell way back when that this is what you wanted to do. And you've gone from that to filming, writing, and directing and producing your own independent movies to now working for major motion studios, motion picture studios, as well as very, you know, A-list comedians. Dane Cook, I mean, I know, like I said, this kind of caters to a comedy audience, but Dane Cook, just real quick, do it in about a minute if you can. Just let me know that whole thing. How did you get hired to work with Dane Cook? Actually, is that something you can do in about a minute, or should we?
Absolutely. It's kind of a boring story. The interesting story was, doing the actual work, which is, I don't know, interesting to me, might be boring to somebody else. But basically, we are friends with certain agents at certain agencies, and his name was mentioned that he was looking for a production company to handle his new special, and this was something that he had never done before. He wanted to direct it. Obviously, he writes all his material, and so every special that he's done before was written by him but then directed by someone else, and he wanted to kind of take the reins on this one, and he just needed a production company to kind of help him do that. And so we ended up being that company. And the first time I met him actually was in Vegas for the shooting. We were at the Venetian Theater, and we just did two nights. And you know, I think I first met him, we went up to his penthouse to meet him. It was myself, the director of photography, and the producer of Troublemaker. And this room was, holy shit, man. I didn't know hotel rooms came in that size. Like, it's so stupid for a hotel room to have a piano. Like, that's the dumbest shit. Unless you're Elton John, like, I can't understand a necessity for the piano in a hotel room. But this had that. It had 4 or 5 bedrooms. I mean, this place was bigger than anywhere I've ever lived. And he was, you know, he could have been a number of things based on what I knew about him, but it goes back to that expectation that I was talking about earlier. You can't really do that. These people are acting, these people are pretending, they are putting on an act, and so you kind of just have to go in blank when it comes to any expectations of who you're going to meet. And he's the nicest, sweetest man, and he is truly funny. I mean, even when he's not trying to be, he's just a funny guy.
Just a naturally funny guy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just the way he sees things, and he's always laughing, and he's had some troubled times before, and he pulled through it really well, and he had some really great ideas for this special, and so, you know, we just met and chatted about the things that he wanted to do, and of course we told him, yeah, whatever you want to do, and set up 7 or 8 cameras at the wonderful Venetian Theater where they used to run Phantom of the Opera. And yeah, we bowled through those 2 nights, and
that was interesting to me when you told me that if you haven't seen it, it's on Showtime. They run it all the time. I think I don't know if it's on Netflix or some of these other places yet, but
it's on Comedy Central now.
It's on Comedy Central now, so check it out. It's called Dane Cook's Troublemaker. I think you have third billing in the credits at the end, third or fourth. But that's what was interesting to me, is that you look at that special and you think, okay, it's a 1 hour special or an hour and a half, whatever it is. That was actually filmed over 2 nights, correct?
Yeah, it was 2 nights. You can't really bank something that big on one night, because there's so many factors that go into it going well or it going poorly. You kind of have to spread it out a little bit. I've heard of comedians spreading that out over a week of shows just to get something right. I know that his special before that, Isolated Incident, I believe was called, was filmed at the Laugh Factory, and he wanted to do it all in one continuous camera shot. And so he just hired a guy with a Steadicam to follow him walking in from outside, walks all the way up to stage, does the entire set on stage, then walks off, and it's all one shot. And it took quite a few tries to get that right. And so, yeah, I mean, the audience could be completely hammered, full of hecklers. It could be maybe there was like a row of people missing because they were absent or late or something like that. Like, you never know. It's something that big, that big of a theater, you have to get the acoustics right, and sometimes that takes sort of a trial and error day. So a lot of shows that you see where you think, oh, this is just the 1 hour special, that most likely took place over at least 2 nights.
Yeah, and to your point, you said comedians who have done it over a week. Chris Rock actually kind of implemented that into one of his specials, where he was actually on, I think, on 3 or 4 different continents doing comedy, and he wore different outfits. So he would wear a suit, or I think one of the stages he was on was at the Apollo, and he was a little more dressed down for that. And he basically spliced in and cut in all of his entire act, 1 hour special, from 4 or 5 different places. And what was incredible about it is, obviously the cameras are set up in the same area. It's blocked almost exactly the same way, because he would tell a joke. And one of the things that Chris Rock does is he works the stage. He goes back and forth, left and right, and he will start to tell a joke, and he will start to walk to the right-hand side of the stage. And the actual footage will change to him in South Africa, where he's wearing an all-white suit, and he's doing the exact same walk in the exact same area with the exact same cadence. And you talk about a professional who knows his act up and down, left and right. I mean, I thought that was an incredible piece of editing, an incredible piece of cinematography, if you will, and directing. Just a great special just to do that. And I thought that was almost peeling back the curtain a little bit to say, yeah, these specials that you see, these big specials, are filmed not in one night, but, over multiple nights. And he kind of just exposed that, and I thought that was brilliant.
That is funny, because at first I was thinking, well, that's pretty fucking lazy of Chris Rock. Like, just wear the same fucking shirt, and you can kind of try at least. But, no, I get it now. Like, I haven't actually seen that special, but that's really creative and fun, a fun way to sort of show off a bunch of comedy. That's really great.
Yeah, I thought it was really well done. So we'll jump off of that. You've worked on a lot of different movies, and with those movies come actresses.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the best of humans, the ones with boobies and vaginas, right? And
way
the best
better than
of, dudes. Oh, yeah. And the best of those are the ones that are in Hollywood. Let's face it, they're better than you and I. Well, not you, because you're in Hollywood, but they're better than the rest of us. That's why they're on TV, and that's why they're
better than me.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's why you're behind the camera. That's true.
There's no question.
So one of the things I wanted to do is talk to you about some of the actresses either that you've worked with or some of the ones that maybe you theoretically might fantasize about at night. So, you know, so everybody, I think every relationship has this where you've got like your get out of jail free card, where you've got your sure. top three or top five people that you could bang sure. and the other is not supposed to be able to get mad. You're a married man.
I am.
I know yeah, this
she
for a
has,
fact.
She has some of these get out of jail, sorry, well, depending on who you ask, get out of marriage free cards. She has a couple of those fellas in her pocket. And so I've actually met one of them.
Oh, no kidding. Who is it?
It is Keanu.
Keanu Reeves. So your wife, who, just for so everybody knows, I was the officiant at your wedding
yes,
last year.
Married us, yes.
I married you two. I turned in the paperwork on time and everything. Your wife, Stacy, she is in love with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
That's the funniest joke I've ever heard in my life.
No, he's Keanu. I'm almost gay for Keanu.
Oh, I hate you. You know, you used to rip on everybody, and now that you're friends with all these Hollywood elite, you're just kissing ass and doing the good cocaine and leaving
honestly,
the dirty shit for the rest of us.
That's correct. You don't get the good cocaine because you don't deserve it. No, that is a joke, by the way.
I totally deserve it.
I have trashed people. I continue to trash people. Just like everybody else in a joking and fun way. But
you should hear what he says about Dane Cook off the air. It's
incredible. Oh, Dane, if you're listening, man, I love you and enjoy your money. No, I'm kidding.
He loves you, Dane. He's told me that millions and millions of times.
I do. But Keanu is one that I have always defended, even before moving here, even before working where I work and doing what I do. I've always defended him. Like, I get the criticism of Keanu Reeves a lot, and I understand that in certain aspects of his career, but I've always been such a big fan of his. And then, of course, when I met him and saw, like, he's basically, the real him is basically what you would think it is, and it's so awesome. It's just equal parts fucking great dude and just hilarious and completely random, and I don't think that there's an actual word that describes it all other than that, you know, like, he's so fucking Keanu. Like, that it sounds probably stupid to everyone listening to this right now, but only when you meet him do you understand what that could possibly mean, and he nails the Keanu.
Do you think he's fucking with people? Do you think, like, he understands what his reputation
yes.
is, so therefore he's going to
yes.
he's like an Andy Kaufman?
I don't think he goes on to public talk shows and directly fucks with people or anything like that, or takes a role and says, I'm going to do this with this, but I think, yeah, in person and with the people that he's talking to, he probably fucks with. Yeah, I think he fucked with me a little bit, to be honest.
Well, you're Canadian. That's easy.
Well, he's Canadian too, though.
Is he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Well, I found that out a day before I went to go meet him, and I'll tell this quick story. I was smoking a cigarette. We were out in the desert, and we were shooting this little spot at this racetrack, and so I'm just outside one of the garages, and I'm smoking a cigarette, and I see him walking up to me. And I mean, he wasn't walking up to me; he was just, you know, he was just
towards
in my direction.
You and you got in his way, yeah.
And I was like, "Hey, I hear you're a fellow Canuck," and he's like, "Yeah, yeah." And I say, "Cool, me too, man. I'm from Mississauga," and he's like, oh, and then he goes to walk around the corner where, like, the rest of the crew is, and he just says very loudly, he's like, Mississauga, and then he just keeps walking, And I'm like, that, yeah, it seems like he's fucking with me a little bit there.
That's good. You know what? I now like Keanu Reeves, and I forgive him for all those terrible Matrix movies outside of the first one.
He's great. She's definitely, and I told her, because I knew like a couple days prior that I would be working on that thing with him, and I did tell Stacy, and I refused to tell her where we were going to be.
Do you think she would have showed up with like Keanu spelled out on her chest or something like that? Do you think she would have gone to those extremes, your wife?
I've known her for 8 years, and so I feel like I should be able to answer that question, but I can't.
Do you know what your wife looks like? Have you looked at her ever?
Yeah, it's I just didn't want to take the chance. I didn't. She was asking, and she started guessing, and I just told her to stop it.
Well, that's good for you. Here's what we're going to do. You know, the reason why we brought this up is I asked Matt a couple days ago to think, you know, really put some thought into this list of his top five entertainment girls, Hollywood actresses, whatever, that he would right now, theoretically, if he had a shot, if he was either A, single, or his wife would let him and the opportunity presented itself, you know, who's on his list? What is he working with? I did the same, and I asked him to really put some thought into it, and he tells me right before we got on the air that he put about 5 minutes of thought into it today. So thank you for the inconvenience you put yourself through to really prepare yourself for this interview. I really do appreciate it.
That's all. I've always done homework and book reports and shit like that. It gets done. It gets done.
Okay, so let's get into this list. We heard about Keanu Reeves and your wife and how she would totally leave you for another Canadian.
Yeah.
This is about us, Matt. This is you and I, old friends.
Yes.
Different sides of the entertainment spectrum, if you will,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You behind the camera in front of big stars and me in front of the camera in front of nobodies. So,
right.
Sorry, audience, but you're nobodies.
Fremont shouldn't exist.
You know, my good buddy Kabir Singh is from Fremont, so he's put me on many shows, including this Friday, April 17th. At the Swiss Park in Newark for the 420 Comedy Joke Out, along with Abel Jaramillo, myself, Charles Kelly, Chris Storin, Christopher John, Butch Escobar. So I'm not going to speak bad about Fremont right now, but...
I stand by my comment.
Okay, well, you're probably right. We'll talk about that off the air and how much you hate Keanu Reeves and Dane Cook as well.
Oh, man.
Okay, so I'm going to be honest with you. We needed to limit this to five for time purposes. The problem is I want to bang so many of these girls that it's so hard for me to keep it to five. The other problem that I ran into is I thought this was going to be an easy list for me because I've had like my top five for a long time. And what I found out is that my top five from 5 years ago, because I haven't thought about this list in a long time,
right,
has really changed. And I don't know if that's because of age or if that's because I've had a kid or both or what. But, I mean, I had names on there like...
You're saying your age, not the age of the women.
Both. I think both. Okay. Yeah. So, like, Jessica Alba is a standard. I think everybody almost has her on the list. She's been on my list forever. She was my A1 forever. She's not even in my top five anymore.
Wow, didn't make the cut.
No, Rosario Dawson, another one who I just was absolutely in love with. And don't get me wrong, if she came into my studio right now and said, let's bang, I would make the list. She would obviously be back in my top five at that point.
The list would change.
Yes, it would. I mean, we're only, as Chris Rock says, faithful as our options, correct? So, my list has changed quite a bit. So,
okay.
How do you want to do this? You want me to go first, and then we'll kind of talk a little bit about it, and I'll tell you my justification, and you can tell me why I'm wrong or right, and then we'll chat about it. Yeah, and then
absolutely.
You'll go to the five. Okay, so that's what we'll do. And that's how we'll end this. You want to stick around? We'll do another podcast after this, too?
Yeah.
Perfect.
Let's do it.
Beautiful. All right, so my top five, now I'm going from five to one, so least greatest to greatest greatest.
Okay.
All right? So my number five is Natalie Portman.
Yes.
And I think most people know who Natalie Portman is. Granted, she is extremely hot. We all have seen her. She's beautiful. She's pretty much flawless. The nerd in me likes the fact that she was in Star Wars, right? I'm not a big Star Wars fan, but I appreciate it. I appreciate the legacy of that. And she's a big part of that legacy now. She had the big, you know, Natalie Portman has that aura about her, that she's a very girl next door, very sweet, very humble kind of girl. And yep. then she goes on Saturday Night Live and just rips it with this big cussed out swearing shit on your chest rap, which was amazing. Yes. And it showed how funny she could actually be, which as a comedian, I think is a huge turn on.
It was brilliant.
Yeah, and then more than anything else is that scene in Black Swan. If you haven't seen Black Swan, there is a scene where Natalie Portman is jerking herself off in the bed. And I know she's acting, and that's how good of an actress she is, that I was convinced that she was just going to town on herself on film. So much so that the first time that I watched that movie, I was forced to watch it with a girlfriend who's now my ex. That scene happened, and I paused the movie, and I told my girlfriend, we have to go have sex right now. We have to. We can come back and watch the movie again in 2.5 minutes, but sure. right now, we have to have sex. So that scene alone shot her into my top five.
Yeah. Well, I think if she wasn't on everyone's list by the time that SNL video came around, she probably, even honorably mentioned, would make the cut, but that I think the Black Swan pretty much forever immortalized her on people's lists.
It's so good. It's really good.
It's really good. Yeah, I mean, and her and Mila Kunis as well.
Mila Kunis. So I will say right now, Mila is an honorable mention. She's got a lot of good things for her, but I didn't want to rely too heavily on that scene and on that movie. But I think that tells you how good that goddamn scene is.
It's a good scene.
That those two from that movie, which is primarily a chick flick in some regards, sorry, Darren Aronofsky, but it's primarily a chick flick, that alone almost put two girls into my top five. And my list is very prestigious, as you know. So that is my number five.
Okay.
Who is your number five?
I thought I'd be creative, and I instead of choosing just actresses, I thought I would go with fictional roles played by females in movies.
So you are taking the characters that the females played.
Yes. Yes.
Gotcha. You are a weird person.
Two asterisks here. One, I can't count very well, and two, I don't take direction well at all.
You can't count because you're Canadian and you guys use the metric system.
Oh, I like excuses are fun. Yeah, and they're easy, so I'll take that. I don't have a specific order. I just thought these are the absolute best of the best. And then when I got to five, I kept going, and then I don't really like counting after about seven, so I just stopped. So it's probably around 10 that I have, but it could be more. I don't know. We'll find out.
Your
if anybody
wife
at home
is drawing
wants to
up
count.
Divorce papers right now. She's like, yeah. I agree to 5, not 10.
She's got a lot to put up with for the rest of her life.
She's now going to be able to fuck Bill and Ted because of this list.
They can never meet her. They can never meet ever because she'll be gone in a heartbeat. So I'm just going to go down the list. This is of no... I'm sorry to kill your top, your brilliant top five and the order of importance.
Are you just going to list every single one of them right now, or are you going to stop when you have four left so that we can go back and forth and talk about it?
I can do whatever you want because it's your show.
So you have a million people on this list. I want you to list them, and then when you have four left, stop.
Okay. So I'm going to start with Bond girls because I have to touch. You have if you have a list of fictional female characters, and you don't have any Bond girls on there, you're doing it wrong. So I'll go classic here first and go with Pussy Galore first for the name.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean that's probably the best Bond girl name ever, played by Honor Blackman. But also, because she was the first Bond girl to not immediately jump on Bond's dick. Like, she actually played hard to get for a while. And, yeah, he did he did get around to throwing her in the hay, literally. I believe they did it in a barn or something. But that was really impressive, and she was an attractive lady.
So the other first girl on your list of girls that you would want to fuck is a girl that did not fuck James Bond. Brilliant, Matt. Keep going.
Okay, next, more of the modern Bonds, the first crack that Daniel Craig gave it was Ava Green. Vesper Lind, I believe her name was.
I think I made a mistake. Yeah, keep going.
She, oh my God. I mean, that was the first time that I had ever seen her in a film. And it's just the eyes alone, man. It was intoxicating. But then again, in terms of, you know, sort of a Bond first here, the Vesper was really the first that I think Bond kind of let his guard. It wasn't just sex. It was something else. He wanted to be with her. He said, you know, you've stripped me of my armor or some whatever he says in the film. And that really struck a chord. Like, I had never really seen, I don't think I had seen a Bond where a woman had knocked down his walls. And I thought, wow, okay, you'd knock my walls down as well because you're a very, very pretty lady. So those are my two Bond ladies.
Okay. Eva Green, if you have not seen her, has been in a couple of different movies, and you're right, those eyes are intoxicating. What a wonderful woman to drop your load into. I fully agree with that one. Absolutely.
Next, I'll drop a couple of splits that I had. It's same actress, but playing different roles. So the first would be Mila Jovovich. And I wrote this down, for like I said, you know, like I told you 5 minutes before the show. And my phone kind of hilariously auto-corrected Jovovich to Hoboich.
Yes.
And I thought that was interesting. Resident Evil, the whole Resident Evil thing, she's often has not just one gun in her hand, but two. That really made a strong push for the list. And she's just a hot lady. She's just a really hot lady. She doesn't mind, you know, if the role calls for it, she will bear all. And she just looks great in everything she does. But it was Fifth Element and Resident Evil that I was most fond of her. The odd bandage suit in Fifth Element maybe playing a strong part in that. So that's the first split. The second split would be Selma Hayek. First time I saw her was Desperado, so that had to be mentioned.
You and your Robert Rodriguez shit. Yeah,
I am such a fan of Robert Rodriguez. I'm sure you'll soon find out. Because the next one is From Dusk Till Dawn. That was the other thing. The issue with From Dusk Till Dawn is that she's great. She is a stripper. She plays a stripper for anyone who hasn't seen the film, and she performs a dance. But then she turns into an awful, hideous vampire that no longer looks like Selma Hayek, and then starts eating people. So that I had a little bit of an issue with that. She still had the body, which was very confusing. Like, it was still her body, but then her face was all like fucking lizard out. Like, it wasn't. It was very confusing.
See, just to prove how shallow and unshallow guys can be. She is a vampire lizard face, but she has tits and an ass, so Matt still put her on the list.
Yeah, I feel like my boner sort of turned into like a zigzag boner, where it was like, it wasn't sure what to do. So it was kind of all over the place.
A lot of people like Selma Hayek, and I know you chose the character, but I mean, don't get me wrong, I think I would probably have sex with her if she showed up, but I think I would think about it. Her face is a little too square for me, and I look at her, and if she was yellow, she would be SpongeBob SquarePants with boobs. So I don't know if I can get with you on the Selma Hayek tip, but I've got my weird shit, my own issues, so maybe that's just me.
I like SpongeBob. So next on the list would be, let's see.
Matt, you've mentioned five girls already. How many are on this list?
Oh, boy. Do you want me to? I think
four. You mentioned four. How many more do you have?
I believe eight.
You have eight. You have eight total?
Yeah, should we get another? Can we get number four from you?
Well, it's my show, and I haven't spoken in 14 minutes.
I know, so, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. My next one might be a little bit. People are going to go, "What the fuck? How did she make a top five?" But
Queen Latifah.
No, she's got a lot of money, so maybe. Okay. It's going to be Elizabeth Banks. That is my number four. So Natalie Portman was my number five. Number four is Elizabeth Banks. And if people don't know who Elizabeth Banks is, she is the one that's in All the movies with Seth Rogen. She's in Zack and Miri. She is Miri in Zack and Miri Make a Porno. She is kind of a just an overall attractive female. Like, she's not, she doesn't knock your socks off, but at the same time, she's definitely a girl that you could parade around if you were going to date her and go, oh my God, you know, that's a really good looking chick. I think more than anything is based on her acting career and her acting choices. She can definitely take a joke. I think she's somebody that you could, I think you could fart in front of her and she wouldn't be disgusted with it. She would probably judge it based on the other farts you've had in front of her, and you can have a fun discussion about it. I also think the one drawback from her is I think if you were to go to, like, let's say a baseball game with her and you had to cancel at the last minute, she would still go with your friends and ultimately end up giving one of your friends a blowy in the parking lot because she drank too many beers. But that aside, that's not enough to knock her off the list. I think she's just a cool chick. I think she's just an overall, she's like a sixth man in a basketball team. She's somebody that you can bring in and always have, you know, and you could rely on. I imagine she's pretty good in the sack. I imagine she's pretty good out of the sack in terms of hanging out with her. Just a solid, you know, solid choice. She's a double hitter. She's a line drive hitter, as they say in baseball.
I think she's great. I think you're right, and I think part of the attraction, I mean, she's a very pretty woman, obviously, but on top of that, a big part of the attraction is just how fucking cool she is.
Yeah, you could dress her up or dress her down, and I think she's comfortable in anything, right? So I think that's a very attractive quality in a female who's cool. She's comfortable in her own skin.
Right, and I feel awful about talking for so goddamn long. So let's do your number three as well. Let's do your number three.
Okay, this is probably the one that I'm going to get email about. And by the way, you are listening to Predictably Drunk Smart People Talking About Stupid Things. I haven't talked about the beer that I'm drinking right now, and I should because it's actually pretty damn good. This is the first time I've ever had it. It's Simtra by Knee Deep Brewing out of Placer County. It's actually a triple IPA. It's about 11.5%. So this list might get a little sloppy towards the end here, but that's okay. So my number three is...
Wait, shouldn't I talk about... Aren't you going to ask what I'm drinking?
Yeah, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking Johnny Walker Black.
Wow, okay. So I usually have Johnny Walker Red because I'm cheap. So right. You went with Johnny Walker Black. Have you ever had Johnny Walker Blue?
Is that a thing?
It is a thing.
No,
see,
really.
Look at you. The Hollywood elite doesn't even have Johnny Walker.
I'm an amateur. Yeah. Please explain. What the fuck?
It's $10 more a bottle for something that tastes exactly like Johnny Walker Black.
Understood. Maybe I've just pushed it out of mind.
So how are you drinking it? Are you drinking it on the rocks? Are you drinking it neat? Are you drinking it with a carbonated beverage to mix with? How are you drinking your Johnny Walker Black?
Oh, I prefer hard alcohol neat. I mean, there's no meddling there.
This is why we're friends, Matt. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm surprised you're not doing your Crown Royal because you used to be a Crown fan, but I appreciate it.
Is that another Canadian joke, you prick?
It is a Canadian joke, you prick.
All right. Yeah. Great. Let's start in with the bald jokes now, by the way.
I have all my hair. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Okay, number three. This
number
is probably three. Going to be the one that, you know, I thought Elizabeth Banks was a little bit weird. This is not – she just made this list last week.
Helen Mirren.
She's always number one. Spoiler
okay.
alert.
Okay, sorry.
No, number three, and this is probably going to – people are going to go, whoa. My number three is Nicole Kidman. Nicole Kidman. Old ass.
I don't know.
Boring. Bland, super white, ginger.
You're not selling her very well.
No, and this is why. Because this is how I've always thought of her up until last week, okay? The best thing she had going for her was that Australian accent, which I found out she was actually born in fucking New York, so she's a fake Australian, by the way. But...
Well, it was like a Bruce Lee situation where, I mean, he was born in San Francisco, but just went, like, immediately. They were, like, on vacation or some shit. Immediately went back to the hometown.
I agree. They're both very much liars. So she didn't really ever do anything. Don't get me wrong. She's a gorgeous girl. She just never really moved the needle, if you will. Right. Now, last week, I watched a documentary on HBO called Going Clear, and it's about Scientology and the bullshit that Scientology is, and we all know who she used to be married to, and that is Tom Cruise, who is Mr. Scientology. I mean, behind L. Ron Hubbard, he is the face of Scientology, and what I found out is when he met Nicole Kidman on the set of Days of Thunder, he pretty much said, fuck you, Scientology, for the next decade. Okay, 10 years of not giving money, not setting one foot in the church, not talking to anybody from the church,
because of her.
That's how good she fucks. Okay, oh. This is a fuck list. That is how good she fucks, and that she got the guy who is Mr. Scientology to pretty much say, you know what, I'm good. I don't need it.
She broke Scientology.
She broke it for 10 years. So that intrigues me. That, from a carnal standpoint of I want to see what that's all about, made her that propelled her from maybe out of the top 100 to number 3. That is my number 3, Nicole Kidman.
Well, I don't want to mess with your list. I just don't know if you have all the facts. This might remove her off the list again. And for anyone else curious, you should go onto YouTube and check out a clip from, I believe it was her first ever movie. It was in the early 80s. It was called BMX Bandits, and it was an Australian. It was a weird movie. I'm not even sure if you can call it a movie. It was like if you went into the 80s, you took the X Games from the 90s, went into the 80s with them, and then added a bunch of Australian people. It was bizarre, but she looks like I've never seen her before in that movie. I suggest you check it out. Okay,
there's no going back. I'm starting with right now, 55-year-old Nicole Kidman, or however old she is. I want that. That's the vagina I want.
Okay, understood. Okay.
That's my number three. Your turn.
I'm going to knock a couple off the list here because it's so ridiculously long. Let's go to the 90s. We'll hit up Sandra Bullock in Speed.
You're disgusting. You disgust me.
The Wildcat driving the bus. I don't know what it was. She was sassy. She wasn't a damsel in distress, even though her character was very much in a situation that would suggest a damsel in distress. She held her own, man. She was a tough chick, and she drove the bus. I mean, that's a pretty big responsibility because of her. No one died except for that awful, awful bitch who was like, I got to get off this bus, even though she knew the rules. The bitch knew the rules, and she did it anyway. It's Dennis Hopper, lady. He's going to fuck your shit up. He's missing a thumb. He's off the handle. But she was gorgeous even when she started getting damaged her face because of the bumps and the bruises and the bus hitting things and ramping off things. Still looked great, gorgeous, loved her in Speed. Moving on, honorable mention, I'm going to go with Uma Thurman in the Kill Bills. I think Uma Thurman she just possesses a beauty that is rarely matched. It's just a natural beauty. She is such a pretty, pretty lady. And then it doesn't hurt that she's just kicking ass up and down, up and up and up and down. What was the squad? The squad that she belonged to. The
trouser snakes or some shit.
Sure, yeah. The squad of hitmen. Just murdering the crazy 88s in the House of Blue Leaves in the first one, cutting off anybody who cuts the scalp off of Lucy Liu, I'm friends with, right? So,
Lucy Liu is an honorable mention for me, by the way.
She's a pretty lady, too. But Uma Thurman, I think, I don't know, it's like this inherent beauty that I can't describe, but, I'm a big fan of hers, and I think the Kill Bill was my favorite movies of hers.
I like Lucy Liu because she's an Asian with a lazy eye, which is very rare, and right. I feel like you could sneak up on her and have sex with her, and she'd be like, who's doing that? You know, and right. I think that'd be funny. But
who's there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're listening to Quentin Tarantino's sex list, apparently. Matt Somerville, Hollywood editor, worked on many movies, comedy shows, TV shows. I didn't even mention all of those, but you've done a lot behind the scenes. So we're just talking to Matt Somerville, a good friend of mine, known him for a long time. And we're just kind of going over the list of women that we find, let's just say attractive in case your wife's listening. But I don't have a wife, so it's the list of girls that I would love to fuck.
She would agree with a lot of this, I think.
Okay.
So we're fine there. So you have two more, and I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more.
Jeez, you've added as we were sitting down. Okay, why don't you kill off three more, and then we'll go back and forth for the last two.
All right, so on that level of, hey, listen, Tarantino really makes women look great. Another honorable mention would be Mary Elizabeth Winstead in Death Proof as the cheerleader role. She's just...
Nobody knows who that is, but okay.
Okay, fair enough. Scott Pilgrim, anyone? No? Fine.
That movie sucked, by the way.
You suck, by the way.
I hated that movie. That was a dumb movie.
You're a dumb movie. Rose McGowan in Planet Terror. She has a machine gun for a leg. I'm into the brunettes, if anybody is still questioning my type. Great, great exploitation film, of course, and she fits right in with the machine gun leg, kicks all kinds of ass, is beautiful, is a stripper. There's nothing to not like there. Seeing as I have 14 more women to go through, I'll just move on.
I'll just say real quick, Rose McGowan, I think she's attractive to me because she used to bang Marilyn Manson, who is not a very attractive person. He just has money. So it makes me feel like if I ever get money doing comedy, that I could maybe get Rose McGowan. So that's my attraction to her. Move on.
And that's your goal.
Yeah.
Moving on, I'll save her for last because I think she's probably on a list of fictional characters for everyone. She's probably top three average. So I'll go to Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns, playing Catwoman, the skin tight vinyl Catwoman suit. Definitely my favorite Catwoman of all the Catwoman suits that have ever existed, which has been probably six or seven by now. Be it comics, video games, TV, movies, by far my favorite. Just the lips, those Michelle Pfeiffer lips. You feel sorry for her in the beginning of the film. Christopher Walken, that crazy white-haired son of a bitch, pushes her out the window and all the cats try to eat her. And then she just flips out on her lovely little, like, cat lady home that she made. She just destroys everything, and then she snaps and becomes Catwoman. She's got the whip, she's got the nails, and she's got everything else, and it all is just fantastic. So big ups to my favorite Catwoman version, Michelle Pfeiffer. Moving on,
I'm not going to argue with that. I think, you know, I'm a little bit older than you, but Michelle Pfeiffer growing up was one of those, you know, iconic ladies of Hollywood. Before everybody was famous, she was famous for the right reasons. She's got amazing eyes, still has kind of an amazing body for being, you know, 200 years old or whatever she is. So I can applaud that, yes.
Yeah. Next one would be Alicia Cuthbert in The Girl Next Door.
That is an amazing, yes, amazing pick. Also a Canadian. I see where you're going.
Right, it just happens. Don't blame me. The idea of, and by the way, for anyone who's seen the film, no woman in the world exists that is anything like this character. This is a total wet dream of somebody who wrote this movie in high school and then made this movie when they were grown up. She's just the perfect girl next door, and hence the title. Former porn star, wants to get out of porn but still has porn like tendencies, just wants to have a good time, wants to take you out of class, wants to have fun, has a car, everything that any guy wanted in high school, she is. And I mean, the movie's just made so well. Perfect music cues, just everything lines up for masturbation. It's like the perfect masturbatory movie that is actually not an adult film.
She, the only drawback, and she didn't make my list. In fact, none of your women made my list, and I don't think mine made yours. The only drawback to her is she is a blonde with the dark, dark eyebrows, and that skeeves me out for some reason. I don't understand how that happens. That's like a weird slap to genetics. They should be, you know, lighter eyebrows or darker hair, but that can easily be taken care of. Just dye your fucking eyebrows or dye your fucking hair, and we're back in the ball game.
Right. You feel like she should be from, like, Iceland or something.
It's just a weird look. It's like wearing white socks with black pants. You just shouldn't do it.
Right. I do that constantly. I did that today.
Yeah, you're an asshole. Don't do that.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, dark socks with dark pants. Just being a fucking adult, for God's sakes.
Sure, that's understandable. So I believe Even though I said some kind of number earlier, that was incorrect. I think I have three left. Okay. So I'll knock one off, then we'll go back to your list, then we'll finish mine off.
You're listening to the Matt Somerville Hour with his guest, Sam Marcoux. Feel free, Matt, with his top 17 list of women characters that he likes. So let's bang another one out.
I've ruined everything. Next would be someone that no one is going to have heard of, but Daphne Zuniga.
Yes.
The Sure Thing. And everyone knows her character from Spaceballs. She plays the princess. But in Spaceballs, she's an awful whiny bitch. So I had to kind of shift over to The Sure Thing, a great comedy from the 80s with John Cusack, for anyone unfamiliar. Great. She plays that really smart college girl who is constantly playing the hard-to-get sort of I'm a rich, unobtainable girl who is way smarter than you in every way, and then this goofy fuck that everybody can relate to, played by John Cusack, manages to win his way into her heart and probably eventually vagina. And she, you know, again, it's the brunette thing. She's just a pretty girl. She's a pretty girl, and that's that.
So I just want to point out that Matt Somerville just turned 30. You just turned 30. I celebrated with you.
Yes.
On your list is Michelle Pfeiffer, who is 56.
Oh, wow.
And Daphne Zuniga, who is 52.
Damn.
So Matt has a little bit. And your wife is, what, 3-4 years older than you?
Yeah.
So you have a thing for older women.
You said like. Nicole Kidman, cocksucker.
Okay, but I'm a terrible human being.
Right.
I guess you hang out with me, so that's, yeah.
Yeah, well. You've rubbed off a little bit. Okay. Not all of my list is awful, but some of it is because of you.
But speaking of rubbing off, let me get to my number two.
Okay.
And my number two is probably at this point most famous for being a cartoon character who most guys want to bang. She is the voice of Lana on Archer, which is on FX. If you haven't seen it, fantastic show.
Oh,
I love
yeah.
it. She is the kind of like super tall, super hot black chick that is kind of his foil on the show, if you will. The actual person behind the voice is a girl named Aisha Tyler, who
yep.
if for anybody listening who liked 90s sitcoms on NBC, she played the black girlfriend of Ross on Friends. She's also a fucking hilarious comedian, which, again, really? There seems to be a theme with the girls on my list here. But she is my number two. She is 6 feet tall, Matt. 6 foot tall, gorgeous Amazonian black chick who I think when I think about her, I think like if I sassed off, you know, to steal a word from my mom.
Sure.
If I backtalked, if I got out of line, she would just like punch me and kick me.
She'd
right
really,
in the face,
yeah.
And I would love every second of it. I wish this happens to me in real life. So Aisha Tyler. Yeah, she is my number two.
That's really great. I think she's cool. She's a friend of the nerds as well, because she's a self-proclaimed nerd.
So to that point, she actually knocked off, not on my list, but just on the outside. She's on my bench. If one of these girls drops dead tomorrow, this girl that I'm about to mention comes into the top five. Same thing, Olivia Munn. Olivia Munn got her start on a show called Attack of the Show, which is a nerd show. And she's one of those girls that I think you could take to, and I would never do this because I'm not into comic books or even video games, to be honest. But I think she's a girl that would be really into role-playing, dress up like whatever nerd fantasy you have and allow you to do whatever. So she is my, you know what, she's actually in my top five thinking about that. Somebody's got to go. Whatever, Olivia Munn is right out of there, but Aisha Tyler beat her on that just because of that same thing. I think she's one of those girls that seems gettable, just nice.
Yeah. Down to earth, yeah.
I agree. Punching me in the head. So that's
right.
My number two.
Okay. I don't want to say my number two. Well, first of all, because she's not my number two. She's just
a girl.
The second to last one that I'm going to mention. But because of your Matt likes old people comment, because she's probably the oldest of all of them.
You also had Pussy Galore on there, too.
I did. Yeah. I think she's dead.
Yeah. So. Matt had a dead chick on his list.
So I guess that's the
I should have given you more rules.
I know. I wouldn't have followed any of them, though. So number two for me is Adrienne Barbeau. The one I liked her in the most was The Fog. Little history lesson, she was one of the Scream Queens over the years. She was married to John Carpenter, famous director of Halloween, and she just ended up being in a ton of movies like Creepshow and The Swamp Thing and shit like that. So The Fog, she played this really sort of just... taking a note from your latest mentions, down to earth. She was a radio DJ in this very small seaside town where the fog comes alive and kills people. That's not important. What's important is that she was, I don't know, I feel like she would take care of you, and that's probably part of the age thing.
Yeah, she's 75 years old. Matt, she was in movies when people were scared of the fucking fog.
Yeah, that's true.
And
she would, I think, show you some things. I think her vagina would show you.
I think she would show you what denture cream she uses.
She would show you what the interior of the Titanic looked like because she was there and took pictures.
What was her what was your favorite talkie film that she was in?
I've only really... I almost answered that seriously.
Yeah.
She's not spry, but hey, I saw her in her prime in this movie, and I thought, well, that's just a swell lady. I'll throw her on the list.
Okay, well, now that we have your grandma fetish out of the way, I don't know if you're trying to appeal to... Are you working with her on a project right now? Is that what's going on?
She's sitting next to me.
Okay, good. Well, okay, so we're down to the nitty-gritty. We've got one more for each of us, and then we have to end this podcast because we are going well into overtime.
Okay.
But my number one, or do you want to do yours? How would you like to do it? Would you like to go first or me?
That's up to you because I've talked enough already.
I'll go now because I think mine is somebody that somebody could actually, you know, look up and Google and not be horrified.
Sure.
And my number one is probably not as well known as the other four on my list or the other 28 on yours. but I'm going to go with, she's been actually, I think secretly she's been my number one for a while because I cannot not look away when I'm seeing her on TV, and that is Emmy Rossum, who is about 28 years old, 29, 30, whatever the fuck old she is. She is on a show called Shameless, which is on Showtime. She's been in a bunch of movies, but I mainly know her from the show Shameless, which if you've listened to this show, I am a big Shameless fan. They just finished their fifth season, I believe, and I'm very sad that it ended. But she is just, she plays a Chicago girl, and she just comes off as this very kind of like dirty, nasty, yet sweet girl. And there's something, she's always naked on the show and she's always having sex on the show. She looks like one of those girls that would like spit on you and then lick it off. You know, like spit on you and then be mad that she made you dirty so she'd clean you up with her tongue. And that is just so appealing. And she gets arrested on the show. She's in and out of relationships. She's a fucking disaster. But at the same time, she's also raising her family and trying to do the good thing. So she's got some good qualities to her. I think she's an awesome chick. I think she right now is just my number one. If she walked into the room right now and all five of these girls walked in, I'm choosing her over everybody else. Which, you know, she should probably, you know, she's been nominated for some awards, but this is the award that she should put in the center of the fireplace mantle is Sam Marcoux from Predictably Drunk, the podcast, would like to fuck you more than anybody else in entertainment. So that
I feel
my
like
number one.
Half of your list is women that would like just beat you up.
So what's your point, Matt?
Nothing. That is my point. Mm-hmm. Okay, so
we're very honest on the show. You want somebody who apparently is going to die tomorrow and leave you all their riches. So,
but they'll knit me a sweater
that my chick can choke me with. So yeah, it'll be good.
Oh, we're very unhealthy.
I think my list, all the people on your list, are the mothers of the women on my list. Okay.
So
we're down to your final one. Please tell me she's somebody that's not above the age of 50.
anyone, well.
Oh, my God.
But you're going to agree with this, though. You're going to agree with this. I guarantee it. Because any dude who has ever seen this movie knows, hands down, this is the one.
I think I already know who it is, but keep going.
I'm going to let you guess. I'm going to let you guess. You go ahead, and I'm not going to be surprised when you guess it right.
And for the record, Matt and I did not discuss our list before this show, to clarify.
Not at all.
Based on everything that I've known about this list, and based on what you just said, I am going to say Sharon Stone.
Oh, God, no.
Oh, well, fuck. All right. Well, then I don't know. What would you say?
This is my list, not yours. This is the trashiest fucking leg switch ever. Good God. I don't want to know. That is the void.
And you're doing characters that you want to fuck. And that is the most fuckable person on camera ever.
No, that void, I wish that void was much, much darker, what we saw in that film.
Matt Somerville, hatingSharonStone.com. Okay, go ahead and finish off your now going to be disappointing list.
My number one is Phoebe Cates in Fast Times at Ridgemont.
All right. You redeemed yourself.
Because she's just cute throughout, and she's cute in goddamn everything she does. You know, going back to her 80s hits, quote unquote, Private School Paradise,
Nobody's ever heard of that movie. Phoebe Cates has probably never even heard of that movie.
Well, she was naked in both of them. Oh. So maybe you'll have heard of them now because it's worth checking out.
I'm Googling it now.
Google it then. Fast Times, though, no one likes to see Judge Reinhold jerking off in a pirate costume. But we all took it in stride when we figured out what he was jerking off to, and that was the amazing classic scene of Phoebe Cates slow motion getting out of the pool, taking her top off, and then making out with him. That is just one of the greatest moments in cinematic history, and is for sure my number one.
For the record, also 52. So you like that early to mid 50s era of women.
I liked, you know what? I'd watch her do it again. I'd watch her get out of a pool today in slow motion, which would actually be regular motion, just her moving slowly because she's 52. But I'd do it all over again if I could, but the origin is where my affinity came from is Fast Times, which was like early 80s or something like that.
All right, well, everybody, that is the list. I'm sitting here talking with Matt Somerville. You just got my top five and his top 75, who also happened to be 75 years old in age, of women and characters that we would love to spend the night with.
Yes.
This is Predictably Drunk with Sam Marcoux and Matt Somerville. You can catch me on stage this Friday, April 17th at Swiss Park at the 420 Comedy Joke Out. Myself, Kabir Singh, Chris Storin, a monster lineup, Butch Escobar, Charles fucking Hollywood Kelly. Charles Kelly gets on the show every single week somehow. Elizabeth Maida, no, she's not on the show. I take that back. Susan Maleda is on the show. Jeremy Curry, an all-star lineup. Come check it out. We'll be there Friday in Newark, California. Matt, thank you very much. I think let's do another week of this.
Yeah,
we've got some other things to talk
blast.
About. One thing that I wanted to do on this show real quick, and we'll end on this, that I didn't get a chance to do, but I'm going to do now, is I get sent a lot of terrible jokes every week. And friends that mean well, friends that, for whatever reason, just feel like they need to send me jokes. So I feel like I'm going to start doing what I want. I'm going to encourage my audience to send me your best, worst joke that you have. And if it's the best, worst joke I heard that week, I will shout you out on the show and I'll tell the joke. So right now, I'm going to end with the best, worst joke I heard this week. And this comes from Eric Evans out of Indiana. And Eric writes, you have 67, you have 68, and then you have 69. What comes after 69?
Oh, I give up.
Mouthwash.
Ooh.
And that is the best, worst joke of the week. Thank you very much, Eric Evans, for your terrible contribution to my show.
You like how I didn't even guess 70?
No. Well, it's a joke. I mean, yeah. if you would have just been like 70, I know this. I probably would, you know, see
show over.
Yeah. So there is the best worst joke of the week, of the show, whatever you want to call it. What comes after 69? Mouthwashed. Predictably drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. Thank you very much. We will see you next week.
Bye-bye.